This is NPR's Ask Me Another. I'm Jonathan Colton. Here's your host, Ophira Eisenberg.
Thanks, Jonathan. It's time to welcome our special guest. He's an Emmy Award-winning actor, one half of the sketch comedy duo Key and Peele, and his new Audible original series is called The History of Sketch Comedy. It's Keegan-Michael Key. Hello, welcome to Ask Me Another.
Thank you for having me. I'm really, really happy to be here. Thank you, guys.
In May, you did a video about social distancing with, now former vice president, current president, Joe Biden, where you guys are playing cards and you're doing watercolors and chatting.
Yes, right.
Do you have a great I Met Joe Biden story?
We did a video on, I was with him on Super Tuesday. We're on the campaign trail and he was in California. And there was a really wonderful thing that he did. We were doing a video together where I was playing Barack Obama, and he was his improvisational skills are very good, because I was, Joe, if you're looking for a VP, I'm available. And he was like, hey man, you know, Barack, I'll tell you what, you're the greatest, man. Thank you. I need you to, I'm glad you're backing me up. He was right there with me. He was right there. I'm like, oh, look, do you want to go to Second City? We can go at the set afterwards.
Yeah, exactly.
Here's the most endearing thing that happened that day. We were at that event, and my wife, Elle, and I were there with friends, and they have a three-year-old daughter. And this young girl was talking to the vice president, and he stopped and bent over, and they had a 3.5-minute conversation about Frozen and the fact that there is also Frozen 2, and we can't necessarily determine which is the better film. And it was so... It was fantastic how he was just talking to her, and she was like, and then there's Frozen, and they were having the most wonderful conversation, and he's surrounded by all these people, and he was just zoned in on this little three-year-old girl. It was just delightful. Absolutely delightful.
That warms my heart on so many levels.
I gotta say.
Very sweet.
You hosted the U.S. version of The Planet's Funniest Animals for 3 years.
I did.
You must know. What's the funniest animal? What one?
Okay. So hands down is a chimpanzee doing anything. It's really a chimpanzee doing... Actually, no. Not anything. They have to be either eating peanut butter or chewing gum. A distant second is just penguins falling down.
Right.
That's a distant
second. Always funny.
Because the flippers don't really... But you know when they're trying to like negotiate a small hill or slope?
No, it's just
and they
sad.
Go... Whoop, whoop, whoop. It's like, I guess that says something about me then, doesn't it?
Right,
hilarious.
You can't go in. No, but that's the basis. Just like anyone falling, you're like, that's pretty good.
Really the funniest thing is watching any lower primate flatulate and smell it on their hands and then fall down. You seen that video where the one fell out and he falls out of the tree? That's the gold standard.
Yep.
I mean, really, if we're being honest, That's the gold standard.
That's big in my house right now with a small child.
There you go. You've got an animal, you've got a fart, and you've got falling down.
Exactly. You got the big three.
Triple threat.
You got a full-fledged story. Yeah.
So in 2012, you and Jordan Peele created and starred in the Comedy Central sketch show Key and Peele, produced 298 sketches. Unbelievable. So,
yeah.
And I know that you met way before this and then worked together for years on Mad TV. But I didn't know until I read it that when you were cast at it, you guys were auditioning against each other?
Ostensibly, yes.
Yeah.
We were both being hired to replace another actor on the show who was leaving the show. And it was Jordan's brilliant tactical mind that said, wait a minute. It's like they're pitting us against each other.
Yeah.
What if we just write all of our scenes together or the majority of our scenes together and then we're indispensable? And I went, you are a genius. And so we started writing sketches together so that we were indispensable. And then what we would also do is we would rehearse scenes in our apartment. We lived together for a few months.
Okay.
So when I first moved to Los Angeles, and we would rehearse the scenes. So instead of just reading them at a table read, we would get up and perform them at the table read. And so that the executive producers would have an actual sense of what the project,
and they were like,
what the sketch was going to look like. And they're like, oh, that's great. So that's how it turned out. That's how we kind of ended up being. Now, prior to that, we had already become pretty good buddies because we just have very similar comedic sensibilities and grew up in similar socioeconomic situations. And so it was really, we were meant to be together, really.
And it worked.
It worked. It all worked.
And now you have a new Audible original podcast called The History of Sketch Comedy, and every episode explores moments in sketch history. And
yes.
I had no idea it goes back. I mean, it just goes back further than I thought. 1500s?
Sure.
What?
Oh, yeah. The thing that was so exciting about the 1500s was the movement known as Commedia dell'arte, which was improvisational theater. And I see your knowing nod there.
And
yes.
Comedy. And comedy,
and
right?
And that's really important. Comedy. Like doing comedy and doing topical comedy. Because what they would do is they'd have scenarios in place that they would do to every single town they went to. But then when they arrived at a town, they would do intel. And they would find out if the mayor was having an affair or what was wrong with the magistrate. And then they would insert those people into the story that they were performing that evening. And then they would do little sketches inside the story. Some of the scenes had something to do with the plot, and other scenes they're just doing to have fun.
And they're making fun of authority in that sort of classic way. So
absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Am I to assume then that even early sketch Commedia dell'arte players were not the popular kids?
I would say they were not the popular kids, right? They were listening to those weird lute sonatas. Yeah. While everybody else was listening to recorder. Like, you don't listen to recorder music? What a nerd. Lute. This guy over here. Look at this guy over here. Angelo. He listens to the lute. You know, whatever.
So,
that's my Italian.
So, you know, as someone yourself who's written hundreds upon hundreds of sketches, and then you are finding out all about, you know, the history of sketch, does it just seem at a certain point that the gags, the premises, there's a finite amount, or that we are...
Yes, I'm a firm believer of what's known as the seven plot concept.
Okay.
That there are seven plots, mm-hmm. and then as you extrapolate out, there's about 49, it's seven times seven. It's like 49 subplots. And that's about it. You, as they say, every story under the sun has been told. The exciting part is telling it in a new and different way. And so there are these finite stories because it's just it's these seven different wrinkles in the human condition. Chicken comes home to roost, wish fulfillment. You know, the poor person becomes rags to riches. So
yep.
Those are two. So there's really just those stories, and I think people in the Commedia figured out. They were like, we especially if you're hopping from town to town to town in Italy, you're just going, geez, it's the same stories. We just keep changing the names, and so it's the mayor here, the magistrate there, this guy's wife, whatever the case may be. And they just kept on coming across the same scenarios over and over and over again.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know so many of these things. And sketches, it always has been popular, but I feel like we are, you know, I think thanks to shows like yours, like we're in a sketch renaissance.
I completely and utterly agree.
So when you graduated in 1996 with a Master of Fine Arts from Penn State University, you said your plan at the time, do Shakespeare.
In 96, I wanted to move to Seattle, and where there was a booming theater scene, and I was going to start a theater with friends and only do Commedia ad absurdism.
Are you kidding me?
I was going to do Carl Goldoni plays. Oh yeah, that'll fill the seats. I'm doing an Ionesco festival. You know, but that's what happens after you get a master's in fine arts.
Amazing. All right, so are you ready for an Ask Me Another challenge?
I am ready. I am ready indeed.
So this is a guessing game called To Think Piece or Not to Think Piece.
Mm-hmm.
What you're going to do is help us update titles of some Shakespearean plays to improve upon their search engine optimization so they get the maximum click-throughs on the internet. It's very important.
I gotcha. Yeah, right.
So we are going to give you the original title, and then we're going to give you two pitches for the new title. You just tell us which one fits best.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You got it. All right.
Okay. Well, let's start gentle.
Let's start. We're going to start gentle.
Okay. So, which of these clickbait headlines better applies to Romeo and Juliet?
Okay.
A, the Try Guys try not to fall in love. Or, would a rose by any other word smell as sweet? We asked three scientists.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Wait, but you said Romeo and Juliet.
That's
a
right.
rose by any other
right,
name.
So one actually applies to a different Shakespeare play.
That's right.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. I just flipped my plays in my brain. Because a rose pricking you would make you bleed, which is Merchant of Venice, and a rose by any other name is Romeo and Juliet. I'm sorry, it
yes!
is the second one.
I
overthought my roses.
You knew too much about Shakespeare.
That's a problem.
That's right.
This is what always happens.
That's right. Is it right? Exactly. Like, oh, I know that line. I know that line about the rose. Right.
Right. I have all the details. That's from Act 2, Scene 2, commonly known as the balcony scene.
The balcony
However,
scene. Mm-hmm.
As it turns out, there's no references to a balcony in
balcony.
The script.
Yeah, it's interesting. Isn't that interesting that you just go, it's always just been done on a balcony? And I'm like, they couldn't just do this in a thicket? It feels like it would have been really fun to do it in a thicket.
Okay, so for a bonus point, do you know what play the other headline might refer to? The Try Guys Try Not to Fall in Love.
It's Love's Labor's Lost.
Yes!
Love's
yes,
Labor's Lost.
Yes, yes,
well
yes.
Done.
All right,
mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay.
I'm impressed.
Oh, God,
I might faint.
So, don't worry. No, we have 25 of these.
Okay.
Go.
All right. Which one of these would apply best to Midsummer Night's Dream? A, mm-hmm. 12 surprising ways to transform your bottom. Or B, Imogen's brilliant sleep hack. Take some poison from an evil queen.
So it's definitely the first one.
That's right.
Definitely the first one. Yep. Yeah. I'm trying to think. Yeah. Bottom, of course, is the one character that we all remember from that one.
Yes.
And then, can I go for a bonus point?
Absolutely.
I'm sure. I shouldn't do that.
No.
The other one's a Winter's Tale.
No, we're going for Cymbeline.
British Queen. Yep, Cymbeline. That's right. Okay.
I mean, come on. That's not many people throw around.
That's a
Cymbeline.
Way to sound smart. If you just say British Queen, you can just say British Queen anytime.
British Queen.
You know, it's about women going, oh, British Queen.
That's right. Okay, this is, which one fits better for Anthony and Cleopatra? A, incredible transformation. Watch this man go from betrayed Roman dictator to a salad with anchovies on top. Or B, the one snake to avoid if you're an Egyptian monarch.
B. It's
yes.
definitely B. Yes, yes.
<That's true. laughs>
The one snake to avoid.
Just one.
And that's funny because that was one of those when we would read that in school that you would giggle because I think the snake was an asp.
It was, yeah.
You are so right.
Right. So then, of course, when you're 12, that's the best thing because it's only one letter off from the funniest word you're allowed to say
right.
when you read Shakespeare. Okay, can we read Midsummer Night's Dream again? Because Bottom has an ass's head.
You know,
he has an ass's head. Remember that when you were 12?
Of course.
Yeah.
How simple pleasures.
But, you know, as we consider Shakespeare very highbrow, he was excellent at lowbrow humor. Excellent.
He really was. I mean, excellent. He was, the other thing is, he was a popular writer. He was a populist writer. Because it's funny, he pretty much wrote for the time, he wrote big blockbuster hits.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I imagine the plays that he liked best were the ones that didn't do as well.
Right.
the ones that were satisfying him artistically, right?
Yeah.
Right. Do you want to try to get the bonus point for the
point. Yeah, it's Julius Caesar.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay, here's one for Hamlet. Quiz, is the statue of your murdered wife going to come back to life? Or reaction video, watch the king's conscience get caught by this play within a play.
Reaction video.
Watching
King's conscience get caught. Yes, 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 yes. One of my favorite scenes. My favorite scenes in Hamlet. Yeah.
The play within a play. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's my favorite. You know, Shakespeare was also super into paranoia. I love it.
Loved paranoia. Oh, yeah, yeah. He
Everybody
loved
was getting
paranoia.
Poisoned all the time. I mean, you had to watch out.
Well, after Kit Marlowe died, everybody must have been on their P's and Q's. You know what I mean?
Sure,
you're just like,
I'm sure.
Who's around here just like poisoning playwrights? What the hell's going on?
Totally.
Oh, and for the bonus point, you know what play the other headline refers to?
Okay, now I'm going to go Again, I'm going to go either A Winter's Tale or Pericles.
Winter's Tale?
It's A Winter's Tale.
Winter's Tale.
Yeah, it's A Winter's Tale. Gotcha. Okay. Holy mackerel.
Yep. That's a good one. That's amazing.
They are rattling around in there.
Well, these are some deep cuts, too. I mean,
This is like you take that record. That's the third track on the B side. You know what I mean?
Nobody ever listens to that song.
We're talking like Timon of Athens over here.
I guess people might say like Exit Pursued by a Bear. That's like the only thing, right?
Right, that everyone says from the more obscure play. Right, exactly. Right, yeah. Exit Pursued by a Bear, right.
All right, here's As You Like It. Unrecognizable, mm-hmm. You won't believe what Rosalind looks like dressed up as a boy shepherd. Or B, how many guys from a northern Italian town are after the same woman? The answer will shock you.
Rosalind, B.
Rosalind.
Or A. Yes,
that's
yeah.
right. I said it wrong. I said Rosalind. Terrible.
That's okay. That's Rosalind. Okay. Rosalind. Rosalind. Roses are a theme today. So I think we can go with that pronunciation, right?
That is correct. Yeah. Okay, and how about the bonus? How many guys from a northern Italian town are after the same woman? The answer will shock you.
How many probably guys from the same town are from the same woman? It's Two Gentlemen of Verona.
Yes.
Two Gentlemen of Verona. Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
I was going to be right. Here's your hint too, but you beat me to it.
Right.
So well done.
All right, here is one more for you. This is the last one. For Othello, is it A, Love Aladdin? You won't believe what Iago gets up to in this play. Or is it B, Love Little Mermaid? You won't believe what Ariel gets up to in this play.
Gotcha. Okay, so A is Othello.
That is correct. Iago's the bad guy in Othello.
Right. And then B is Ariel, Prospero, Tempest.
Yeah, you got it.
Perfect.
Yes, the Tempest.
Incredible mastery of the subject has been demonstrated today. We are all
incredible.
We're all impressed.
I mean, I'm in complete awe.
Yeah, totally.
Thank you, guys. No, I appreciate you introducing the bonus point. It's so funny. I guess I really like that guy and the plays that he wrote.
Keegan-Michael Key's new Audible original series, The History of Sketch Comedy, is available now. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, guys. This was an absolute pleasure. I really appreciate it. Thanks so much.
That's our show. Ask Me Another's house musician is Jonathan Colton.
Hey, my name anagrams to Thou Jolt a Cannon.
Our puzzles were written by Kate Villa, Emily Winter, and senior writers Eric Feinstein and Andrew Kane, with additional material by Kara Weinberger. Ask Me Another is produced by Travis Larchuk, Nancy Seychow, James Sparber, Rumel Wood, and our intern, Sophie Hernandez-Simeonithis. Our senior supervising producer is Rachel Neal, and our bosses' bosses are Steve Nelson and Anya Grunman. Thanks to our production partner, WNYC. I'm Hooray Begonias.
Ophira Eisenberg.
And this was Ask Me Another from NPR.